Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Don't play with it, don't be dishonest. Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your blasé blasé of music description. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. Hey, I'm back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up. Gonna let somebody's on next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fitter. That was Don't by Bryson Tiller from his new album Trap Soul, his first album Trap Soul. John Caramonica is here with me.
True.
To help explain the sudden appearance of Bryson Tiller.
Getting that shmoney.
An R&B singer.
Yes. Or
I think.
Right.
I think.
You see, that's the thing. Is he?
We're going to discuss Bryson Tiller in the context of what R&B is and has become.
And ain't.
Sometimes we need to discuss it as the absence of something rather than as a presence, right?
You go to Essence Fest, right?
Have done.
You've been to Essence Fest.
Right.
So if you were a person
who R&B liked, Central.
Yeah. So by one metric, R&B is alive and well, right?
Right.
I'm sure you've never left Essence Fest and felt, wow, R&B's really in the tank.
Oh, no. But, you know, often who you're seeing at Essence Fest are people who are not in the top 10.
Yes.
Not in the top 40. You are aware that you're seeing tradition.
And the extension of a tradition, mm-hmm. right? What was interesting to me about the Bryson Tiller record, which I'm not convinced is a great record. I think it's a very good record.
Yeah.
Not convinced it's a great record.
It's one of those solid records.
Yeah. And it's not even that it's dutiful. It's just, it's committed.
Yeah.
And I think that's what struck me about it, was he had an idea. It really carries through the entire album.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea really came to me when I was engaging with it and thinking, you know, he mentions Drake on one song. And obviously, it's hard to think about contemporary pop without thinking about Drake. And you think of one of Drake's kind of marquee innovations. And his marquee innovation is basically finally obliterating the wall between hip-hop and R&B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since the 80s, you've had these sort of uneasy alliances of the two genres.
Right.
R&B singers joining rappers on tracks, but still maintaining like a sort of traditionalist R&B approach.
Right.
And then that gets eaten away at, and then you have a class of singers like, you know, your T-Pains or your Nate Dogs or whatever, who are basically hip-hop singers.
Right. In the old days, you were either a rapper or a singer.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, there were people who were both, but the meaning of
rapping and singing were still sort of intact.
Yeah.
And then Drake comes along and basically obliterated all the remaining walls between those two things.
Yeah.
I consider that like probably the greatest formal pop innovation of the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the fact that it put a lot of R&B singers out of work.
Right.
If you're the type of person to just be a regular R&B singer. What I was really struck by on the Bryson Tiller record is like, well, here's a guy who was birthed into this life.
Yeah.
He didn't come from, I can't swear he never sang in church, but his idea of R&B is not soul shouts, gospel shouts, like church singing.
Sam Cooke.
Yeah. That's not where he's coming from. If anything, it's Drake.
So it's not R&B anymore.
Not as we have experienced
it. It's Drake.
In my mind, it is. And so what I think he did that felt clever to me is it's sort of like a photo negative of Drake. Drake is a rapper by trade who has imported the aesthetic, the skill set, and the emotional range of R&B into his music and mm-hmm. sort of subsumed it whole.
Mm-hmm.
Bryson Tiller is an R&B singer who has basically done the same thing with hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say he's the first R&B singer who's ever like had a hip-hop swagger,
mm-hmm.
if you want to put it like that,
mm-hmm.
or imported some of the elements. But there was something fully realized about it where I was like, oh, this is like a post-Drake R&B singer.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who basically is trying to establish an identity for R&B in a time when R&B has lost all of its identity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, admittedly, he's doing it by explicitly referencing the guy who helped kill R&B, mm-hmm. traditional R&B mm-hmm. at least. Mm-hmm. But Bryson Tiller is still making a case for it. And that was very striking for me, especially in a fall season, October to December, mm-hmm. where there were a lot of R&B records that kind of landed with a whisper.
Mm-hmm.
And his record didn't. His record took off. He's got radio singles. Obviously, part of the reason he has radio singles is because he sounds like what's on the radio. But I think he's making aesthetic choices that are going to keep the genre interesting and part of the conversation rather than a footnote.
What we're hearing these days when we're talking about Bryson Tiller, and later we'll talk about some other examples, mm-hmm. maybe are singers by description, but rappers in essence?
I think that's part of it. I think also that they're like those tools aren't as different as they used to be. It's always important to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And look, dating back to the 90s, you know, your new or late 80s, New Jack Swing. I mean, you always had R&B guys who were basically rappers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Flash and attitude and right. subject matter. Like that was always there.
Right.
But somehow the singing felt more connected to a soul tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can listen to a Guy record and understand how that came out of the 70s.
Not to be too reductive, but is singing, and we all know what singing is. Mm-hmm. We don't need to define that.
We all watch American Idol. We all know what it is.
Is singing the only reason we're using the term R&B today at all?
It's two things. If you were going to say what creates a separate conversation about R&B.
Yeah.
Part of it's about vocals, the nature of the vocals.
Yeah.
And part of it is about subject matter. When people talk about R&B these days, often what they're talking about is adult contemporary R&B, love songs, Tyrese, Tank,
mm-hmm.
even something like Kem. Or even like you start to move in like the light jazz arena, your Will Downings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Eric Roberson.
And these are people who are good singers who don't want to make any concessions to the encroachment of hip hop onto their territory. They don't care about radio play or they're not particularly interested in radio play.
Right.
There is adult contemporary R&B radio.
Yeah.
But it's not a particularly big seller. It's not right. like a huge traffic generator.
Right.
But that's not like if you were to say to someone, the average person on the street, like who's a big R&B singer today, they wouldn't say those people. They'd say Chris Brown.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is you listen to Chris Brown and Chris Brown, who's like a better singer than you think he is.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Brown doesn't sound like a traditional R&B singer. He's flexible. Sometimes he's rapping. Sometimes he's making dance records. You know, he's making Michael Jackson type records. Very rarely is he doing anything that's like explicitly connected to soul traditions.
Right.
And that's very striking that the center of the genre right now has almost nothing to do with what people who've been listening to music for 30, 40, 50 years understand as them. I think basically you can listen to hip-hop in 2016 and, like, understand the connections to 1986. But if you listen to R&B, I think it's much harder to understand the connections from two, three, four decades ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why Tiller is fascinating to me, because he was a guy who basically was born into this environment. And then instead of giving himself totally over to it and say, my destiny in life is to be an accent piece for a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, no, I'm just going to take this whole mush as it's been presented to me and like remold it in the shape of R&B.
So he wasn't absorbing Sam Cooke or whoever.
I mean, I can't swear he wasn't, but it doesn't. That's not what his music is.
It doesn't come through in the song.
No, he's not like making Anthony Hamilton records.
So,
you know?
Right, exactly. So who was he absorbing?
My sense is he was absorbing Drake. He was probably absorbing R. Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Jodeci, groups like that. Maybe also Party Next Door, who's Drake's protege. There was like a big, when the Tiller record came out, it was starting to get big. There was like a big Twitter, I don't want to say war, but like Twitter discontent where people be like, oh, Tiller's taking Party Next Door spot. Which makes sense because both of them are employing similar strategies. That said, Tiller has like a hit in a way that like Party Next Door has not had a hit mm-hmm. in a very straightforward way. But yeah, they are employing similar strategies. I mean, I remember after Nothing Was the Same came out, I wrote a little piece about basically Drake already birthing a generation of artists who were influenced by him. And they were falling kind of into two categories. They were like emotional rappers. And then there are sort of like R&B singers who were like basically a little rappy.
Mm-hmm.
Party Next Door was that. There was no Bryson Tiller at that point, but Bryson Tiller is basically the loudest and proudest exponent of that idea.
Well, you've been talking about post-Drake records for as long as
Before Drake.
As long as I've known you. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
I remember a T-Pain record coming out, 2006 or something, 2007 maybe. You were describing it to me as a post-Drake record.
That seems unlikely.
I think you meant it in a different way than you mean it now. Now you actually mean it literally. Back then it might have been sort of.
It probably wasn't 07. It was probably maybe more like 08 or 09. But yes, no, now I mean it literally. I mean, look, Drake is such a category killer. You know what I mean?
He actually gets right in front of R&B like a planet getting in front of the sun.
Yes, it's interesting because think about the ongoing relationship of rap and R&B, right? So you have disco, and then rap comes along, and rap is basically like disco with rhymes for a little while, and then eventually disco dies, and 80s soul comes up. You have Quiet Storm soul, and then you all of a sudden have this stratification in black music where you have adult-oriented music and you have kids-oriented music, which is rap music. Mm-hmm. Around the 80s, rap music becomes more inclusive.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we want to bring women to the party. We want to have a slightly older audience. Like, so we have rap songs that have R&B verses, or rap songs that have R&B choruses, rather. And then you have the 90s where sampling hits a peak and Puffy's just like, well, I'm just stealing all the music from the 70s and 80s and I'm basically rapping over that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I implicitly acknowledge the importance of this tradition, but we're going to remake it our way. All worthwhile approaches, but all approaches which keep the two skill sets completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Then you end up with your T-Pains, your Akons, your artists who really start to blur the lines in a real, real serious way. And then Drake comes along and is like, this is actually my entire reason for being.
Mm.
And throughout the 90s, I mean, in the 90s, you still had standalone R&B stars. But in the 2000s, that became harder to come by.
Right.
Like, name an A-plus standalone R&B star after Usher. It's Chris Brown, and that's really it. Mm-hmm. And if you really listen to Chris Brown records, they're not traditional R&B. They're not even close to traditional R&B records. Mm. They're all over the map. He can do a straight Michael Jackson rip, and then he can do a dance song.
Yeah. We're leaving Beyonce out of this conversation.
Totally good point. I am talking about male R&B singers.
Okay.
That's fair. I mean, you know, we're leaving out Beyonce. We're leaving out the era of Destiny's Child. We're leaving out Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, although Rihanna is less of a soul singer in my mind. But I'm talking about male R&B singers.
Okay.
So as recently as, I want to say, 8 to 10 years ago, you had standalone male R&B stars who are young and like au courant. They're not really being minted anymore. Chris Brown is sort of like a full-service pop star. If you think about R&B, like Tyrese had a number one record in 2015, which is absurd. I think he only sold like 80,000 copies, but it's like it was a standalone R&B number one.
Right.
But Tyrese is, I don't know, he's as old as me and you.
Well, let's talk about somebody else who didn't just appear out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremih.
Yeah. So Jeremih, God, what a bum run Jeremih's had, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jeremih's a guy who got famous off of a record called Birthday Sex. This is like a very good standalone R&B record.
Yes, it was.
Like a rare R&B hit in like, what, 09 or 2010 or something?
Mm-hmm. About 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It was something new.
Yeah.
Felt like something new.
He has a very particular vocal tone. And then what happened is all of a sudden, like, basically Cool Kids took an interest in Jeremih, which was maybe unexpected for both Cool Kids and for Jeremih.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not succeed with follow-up songs of his own. And he became an accent piece on other people's records. And I thought he was very good as an accent piece on other people's records, but he was running the risk of kind of being like a Nate Dogg figure, of just a guy who shows up and sings the chorus. So this record, Late Nights, the album, which came out 5 or 6 weeks ago, has been bumped many, many, many times.
Right.
Like ad nauseum.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a version of this record from like probably a year and a half ago.
That's what I was thinking too when it came out, right?
Yeah, like I mean there was an EP in between that had the same name or just called Late Nights. But like there are older versions of this album that exist in the world.
Right.
Jeremih is a guy who I always was hoping could actualize into like a standalone R&B star, but he began sort of like melting at the edges and like kind of like, I don't know if it's that his backbone wasn't strong enough or his voice wasn't strong enough or whatever it was, but basically whatever hope sort of post-Birthday Sex that he was going to turn into a true modern day R&B star basically started to slip away.
Well, from that new album, Late Nights, let's hear the song We.
Which is a banger. So let's do it.
I think about all the time, think you may need all of mine. Hate to say, you know the love is blind. I'm about to see, I close my eyes. They can't see you in here though. Most of them need dollar signs to make every day your birthday and every night your Valentine. But we tried that, we could be somewhere in the climate. It's warm long as you around me. I swear that everything will be just fine.
That's We by Jeremih from Late Nights. What does Jeremih not have that Bryson Tiller has?
I spent a lot of time when I was writing this piece thinking about that. I think Jeremih has baggage, and Bryson Tiller doesn't have baggage. And that may sound like a perplexing way to explain why one has had a certain degree of success and the other one is not having as much success.
You're talking about personal things? Or
no,
or
no, I mean like industry baggage.
Oh, industry baggage.
Yeah, like yeah. Bryson Tiller is able to kind of like come as a fully formed thing.
Yeah.
And to be like, this is a thing. And for radio programmers, in so much as radio matters, which I think for this genre it does, it doesn't matter for all genres, but I think for this matter, genre it does. For a radio programmer that's playing Drake into Travis Scott into Post Malone, what Bryson Tiller is doing makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, the tempo's a little slow, but fundamentally, it follows the same aesthetic jumble that they're already dealing in. And you can then credibly say, like, yeah, we play R&B. We got that Bryson Tiller record. You know, whereas all those other songs are like basically just rap songs that have R&B instincts.
Right.
Jeremih is a guy who I think has established a pattern in the last 2 to 3 years of being a good spice for somebody else's record, but not holding his own. He had two hits. I mean, We is sort of a hit right now, and Planes was a hit earlier. Although, if I'm being completely honest, it probably took me about 2 weeks of hearing Planes before I realized it wasn't R. Kelly. Like, it's a straight R. Kelly rip.
Subject matter is rather narrow for Jeremih.
If existent at all.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his thing.
This is the thing.
Vocal timbre is his thing.
Yeah.
And rhythm. He's a very rhythmic singer.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like... like, when you think about a soul tradition, and again, it's like, I don't want to come off sounding old and be like, everybody's got to be compared to a soul tradition, but we are talking about a lineage here. The rhythm of the singing, you don't, like, the quick pace and the of Jeremih singing, that's something that feels particularly modern, and also something that is not suitable for all production, all beats, all like it's very specific.
Right.
When you hear a Jeremih song on the radio, it doesn't sound like the other songs.
Right.
Bryson Tiller does sound like the other songs.
Back to the larger idea of R&B. I mean, I think that when you think about R&B, that gigantic tradition that goes in a lot of different directions, one of the constants is that it's kind of nourishing. It expresses something about the human condition. It goes to fairly deep places, even if they're, you know, performative and stagey. But it's about love and hope and sex and dreams, and it takes that stuff seriously. It's not a joke. Which brings me to Babyface.
Yeah, well, I thought I was going to bring you to gospel. That's where I actually thought. Because all those things still exist. They just exist in gospel, and they exist in, like, adult contemporary R&B.
Sure.
But here we are at Babyface.
Yeah. Who's still out there?
Still out there. Sort of a little mystifyingly, if I'm being honest. And I love Babyface. Like, there's no downside to Babyface. But it's a little vexing. It's like it's a weird moment for Babyface. Babyface just put a record out. That's, like, pretty okay.
Return of the Tender Lover.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not... peak Babyface, but it's like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a weird moment for Babyface to be coming out with a record. I vastly preferred the album last year, well, I guess 2 years ago at this point, with Toni Braxton.
Yeah.
The was like marriage, love, marriage, divorce, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
That was Flames.
Why did you like it so much?
I really felt like they each brought out the best in the other. Mm-hmm. I really feel like they were testing each other. An interesting thing about contemporary R&B in a traditional sense, like Monica just put out a record, for example. And like I felt like there are a bunch of songs where she's trying to make radio records, like contemporary sounding records.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of other songs that are like, I want to make songs like the old, you know, like the old generation made it. But like, there's no one sharpening that knife.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one to go up against.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And when I was hearing Babyface and Toni Braxton on that record, I was like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. something's at stake here
in their singing, in their delivery. In their
singing. Yes, I mean, also I felt like it was a well written record, but like I felt like the singing. It wasn't just like, I'll just knock out these songs.
Well, Babyface is a musician and a really skilled songwriter. And there's a baseline of talent, of quality
in
what he writes. And that's also something that is kind of leaving R&B. It's changing.
It's different.
To be fair, it's just changing. I mean, R&B, it's just different.
The thing is, R&B is now being made very similar to how pop gets made. Increasingly, especially if you look at someone like Chris, you look at a Chris Brown record, like Chris Brown records are made the same way Katy Perry records are made, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't really depend on the quality of Chris Brown's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually, okay, I remember when I was doing, this is like 4 or 5 years ago, I was doing a piece on Coo Carell, who was Justin Bieber's vocal producer.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time with him, like, you know, probably like 4 to 5 days over the course of a couple weeks. And we were talking about R&B, and I was like, who's the best R&B singer right now? Like, who's singing? And he's like, Chris Brown. And I was like, what? I was like, you're out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no. He's like, that guy can really sing. He's like, it's not on the songs.
Mm.
But he's like, he's a bad singer.
It's not on the songs. That's interesting, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he's like, the songs don't ask it of him.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's not on the songs. He's got the talent. He could demonstrate it to you right here.
He was basically saying that the songs that Chris Brown was making were not demanding of him in that particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe were physically demanding because they're dance records and Chris Brown's an exceptional dancer, demanding in other ways. But they were not... There was a time in R&B when like that's what you wanted to put first.
We don't need R&B singers anymore to be great singers.
Well, this is okay.
Is that what we're getting at?
You are maybe unconsciously echoing this point that R. Kelly recently made. I feel like we have to at least qualify a little bit and say we're talking about Chris Brown and R. Kelly, both of whom are men with like extreme personal demons that have shaped their careers in myriad ways. So we just have to – I want to qualify everything we're saying with that. R. Kelly put out a record – a few weeks ago called The Buffet, not sell very well. And then R. Kelly put out a video right afterwards. I was basically like, people aren't supporting me. They're not supporting real R&B. They're not da-da-da-da-da. They're not supporting. Like, you know, he's basically made an argument that, like, black audiences need to buy this and support this. I think that's basically a BS argument. But, like, I think what he was really probably reacting to is here he is. In modern terms, he's a traditionalist. Now, in 95 and 96, he was edgy. But in modern terms, he's basically a traditionalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets no traction whatsoever. And R. Kelly, I mean, there's a million reasons to dislike R. Kelly. But singing is not one of them. And that's, I don't know if you saw the thing for GQ recently. He did this like long feature with GQ.
He did.
But then also did a video where he like sings through his life.
Right.
And there's something about the way he speaks, the same way you and I speak in words, he speaks in music.
Mm-hmm.
That was very, very striking. And you just can't imagine any of the current crop of R&B stars doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's something kind of a DNA level about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't imagine it happening with anybody else. Anyone who's like 24 and feels that way about singing in a soul fashion is making gospel records.
As you say, when he first came out, R. Kelly like had something of the new about him, edgy and whatever. At the same time, he was also, you can hear Sam Cooke in his voice all
yes,
the time.
Absolutely.
And,
well, that's what he was raised on.
Right. But there's something different going on now where if you are going to reflect something that you absorbed in your youth, it's going to be 10 years old or less. It's not going to be something that's 30 years old.
I do think that's partially true, but I also think that I sort of had held off writing about Bryson Tiller. The record came out in October, and I didn't write about it until December. I felt like I didn't understand the strategy, and then it dawned on me. And it dawned on me sort of in the wake of the Ty Dolla $ign record, where I was like, there is no way to make a pure R&B singer in 2016 who exists outside of the gravitational pull of hip-hop. It's not possible. The way that the genre's powers are balanced, it literally just can't happen anymore. But what happens if you take that universe and you respond to it and you create a new form of R&B or a more evolved form of R&B that's reacting against this particular moment. Mm-hmm. Once I understood Tiller in that context, I got excited. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I was able to do that is because just before that, Ty Dolla $ign had put out this record, Free TC, which was one of my favorite records of last year. Ty Dolla $ign runs the risk. He's like basically a top line melody guy who has a record deal. He's like a Bruno, almost like a Bruno Mars figure in a way. He's not super charismatic. He doesn't have the best voice, but he has melodic ideas for days, and he has thematic ideas for days. He's probably like the best current songwriter working in this space, in my opinion. He reminds me, and you know, I don't say this just because Babyface is on his record. Babyface is on the Ty Dolla $ign record, which is amazing.
It is very interesting.
Yeah, but he reminds me of Babyface. Yeah. Even before that, he reminded me of Babyface. Mm. And I was very, very struck by how Ty Dolla $ign had basically taken... It's like he'd been handed a genre in pieces, and then he made something of it. And it's not something that is ignorant or in denial about hip-hop's influence and sort of obfuscation of R&B, but it's something that uses that as the platform and then steps off to do something different.
Well, then why don't we hear one of those tracks from Free TC by Ty Dolla $ign as we exit? Let's hear Horses in the Stable.
Horses in the Stable.
Thank you, John Caramonica.
Yeah, horses in the stable. Horses in the stable. Yeah, that I can ride. Oh, anytime. Yeah, horses in the stable. Horses in the stable. Yeah, that I can ride.
And thank you for listening. John Caramonica has been our guest. Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez are our producers. You can read what John Caramonica has written about these people at nytimes.com/music. And we hope that you will listen again next week. Bye-bye.